Okay, so we're going to talk about now, it's a class called What Are We Here For? And the reason that it's the first class is because it helps us focus on the entire fellowship experience. And what we want to give you a picture of what it is we're doing. Yesterday we had orientation, which is just some dry rules, what to do, what not to do, how to make sure you're here for 3 weeks and we don't have to ask you to leave in the middle or all kinds of crazy stuff like that. But now, since that's gone and we're starting the studying process, we're going to give you a little bit of a focus just to see what it is this organization that you've stepped into and what's our goal of this trip. What's our goal of this trip? Okay, so we look at you pay attention to the classes we have, you'll see there's a few tracks. Okay? You'll see there's a few tracks. First thing is, why does somebody come to Israel for a trip? Why does somebody come to Israel for a trip? So coming to Israel is different than going, to Hawaii or to Maui or, some Fiji island or something. Coming to Israel for everyone is a different experience, right? Does the other person say, I'm going to Israel to party, man. I'm going to hit those clubs, those bars. You're wasting your time. Why? Because the club is probably as big as this blackboard, right? The music is Israeli music blasting loud with a bunch of people just dancing like this, right? Can't moving around. So you don't understand what the guard's telling you. You're overcharged for the watered-down drinks. So, it's not the experience. Why does the person come to it, right? It's true. I know. I hear from all the students. They're like, that stuff was watered down. I'm like, yeah, but by the time you got to it, after 15 drinks, it was fine for you. Don't worry. It did the job. So that's not why you come to Israel. Why does the person come? What's so special about why our nation's always trying to get to Eretz HaKodesh? Who wants to take a shot? Maurice, what do you think? What's so special? Why do we come to Israel? What's so special about it? All the Jews always, when I get, sometimes we accept a kid on a trip and they put it on their email as a signature. I'm going to Israel! What? I'm going to Bermuda! What's so special? Tell me, what's so special? What's the reason people come to Israel? It's for what?
Spirituality.
It's spirituality, closer to God. Because we all feel that the air here is different. I felt it yesterday, the air was a little different in the bus, but in terms of it's just a little bit of a challenge on that bus, especially in the back, it was a little cloudy, but it's okay, today everything's cleared up. But in terms of, we all here, we're coming because we want spirituality, we want closer to God, and we come with that focus. Trips like Birthright have changed the world. It's now, Israel's a part of everyone. It's a part of all the youth. Everybody's speaking about it. Everybody feels it. So what we're going to do here is we're going to make your Israel experience the best that it could possibly be. We're going to make your Israel experience the best that it could possibly be. Now, in order for someone to really come out, guys, there's two stages you have to go through. In order to reach a stage of change or growth, you have to understand. And, you have to experience. Meaning what? Not only, it's not just to study something. If you read something in a book, it's not the same thing as when you experience it. When you take off from your busy schedule, at school, at work, at home, away from, your community, away from your home life, and you come to where things are different, then that breeds a sense of change. That's when you're able to take a pause for a minute. That's when you're able to, that's when you're really able to grow. Now, we're going to have, in the class, we're going to have like a part that's going to go through philosophy. I mean, it's going to have all kinds of classes that are dealing with all kinds of hashkafot. Does anybody know what hashkafot is? Meaning what? What does it mean? Like all kinds of questions that you might have had on God, on Torah. Is it true? Is it not true? Why is it important to know if the Torah is true? Huh? Why is it important to know if the Torah is true? What happens if the Torah is not true? Then me and Rabbi Dov and Rabbi Michael are going out tonight clubbing. If this is not true, right? I'm going to shave with a razor and have a cheeseburger on the beach on Yom Kippur. If this is not true. Yes or no? And if it's true, I'm going to take my son, who's 8 days old, I'm going to take a knife and give him a boot to the line and say, Mazal Tov! Yay! Wow! I'm scared. The next 8 days is better. I'm going to chop my head off now. I'm dead. Because so it's important to know, is this book that our parents are telling us to look inside in the Bet Knesset? Ah, the Chazan is reading. Afa Makom. Ba'idaber. Nu b'chavod. Tistakel b'zim. Nu mazbik. Is it true or is it not? That's one thing we're going to do, but it's not enough just to understand it intellectually. You also have to feel it, and that's why we have the staff. The staff is going to turn into like a living example. You're going to live with us. You're going to understand. You're going to have the class. We're going to talk to you, and then after, you're going to live with us. You're going to see. You're going to ask. We're going to spend Shabbat together. We're going to bring our families. You're going to see my little Sfaradi black kids going to be running around. My kids are brothers, man. My brothers. They're great. They're great. These little like dog kids running around. Like, oh, that must be one of Levi's kids. You know? You're going to see my wife. Rabbi Dov is going to be here with the family. Rabbi Michael is going to come with his family at one point. You're going to live with us, right? So it's about understanding, and it's about experiencing. Now, in addition, you have to not just understand and experience, but we have to make it practical. What's a major challenge that's at youth today, that youth are experiencing today? The Torah doesn't talk to us. Yeah, back in the day on Shabbat, they used to like knock stones, so that's why I can't turn on the light today, right? Okay. Oh, that makes sense to me. Because they used to have a hard time making fire, so I can't make fire today when all I have to do is press a button. The Torah doesn't seem practical. What is all this smooth? Let me free! I want to partay! What is this? No, seriously! Kashrut. To pray. I have to take my blood pressure every day. See how I'm feeling? I feel fine, but thank you very much. Tafsik. Nachon, it doesn't make sense. It's not practical. You can't live it. You know? You can't live it. It's okay if you go into some community and you close yourself up in a little bit of a box and you stick them inside, you know, and you lock it, then you'll be happy. But for me, in my life, in Montreal, in LA, in Toronto, in New York, it's not practical. It's not going to be. So what we're going to do here, we're going to beat you at your own game. I guarantee it. Take me up on it. You will see the staff. We will beat you at your own game. We will show you we can have more fun with Torah doing mitzvot than you could ever imagine and you could ever have yourself. Take me up on it. You'll see. But it's not stam for no reason. It's part of your experience. In order for you to grow. Unless it's my cell phone. But in order for you to grow, you need, right? You need to see how it's practical, how you could live it, how it has simcha, how it has happiness, how it can make a difference, how you can bring it up to yourself, how you can bring it up to your wife, because when you get married, your husband, your children, right? So that's another part of it. Now, the third point, another point I want to add, it's not enough just to keep all this information within ourselves. But we have to be able to take it to the Jewish people and to the whole world. The Jewish people today are drowning. We're drowning. The Sfaradim are drowning. In 5, 10, 15 years, we're going to be cut half in number. Well, all the things that are going on with the youth and intermarriage and all these issues and people stepping out of religion, in 10, 15 years, we're going to be half as big. The Jews, already there's a 50% intermarriage rate, and the Sfaradim now are a little bit safe, but it's starting to happen. I get chol. So one of our, and the world itself is going to, you know, we all feel that, you know, the world itself is going to be going head to head. One of our jobs and one of our goals here on this trip is to create people like yourself who are going to be a light onto the nation. They're going to be Or la Gola. You know what Or la Gola means? was all la gola mean? All light, la gola, onto the exile, onto the nation. We have to show the world how you're supposed to behave so we don't kill each other. Okay? So all these things are encompassed in these 3 weeks that we have. Now, what are some of the biggest problems that are going on in the world? Come on, guys.
This is the part in the lecture where the participants participate in the professor's speech.
Come on. Tell me, be more specific. Oh, okay, so let's be specific. What's some of the problems that are going on in the world?
Hunger,
starvation. There are countries that are, people that are starving. What else?
Slavery.
Child slavery.
Global warming.
What else? Middle Eastern war stuff with Kippur, correct? Yeah? Right? If war or fighting.
Poverty.
Home violence. Poverty. Darfur.
Drugs.
Drinking. Right? All these. Divorce rate. Right? All these are major. These are all major problems that are going on in the world. Right? Iran is threatening to blow up Israel. That was an exciting thing. Now, let me ask you a question. Why aren't we doing something about this? What? Okay, but why? So, if you want to talk about specifically about the Jewish people, what about, why aren't enough people doing something about it? Anybody? Any problem? Darfur. People are.
Because the government doctors.
Because the government. What else? Why are we doing something about it? What does that mean? We're looking only at ourselves. Okay. What else? Why else aren't we doing something about it? What do you think? Yeah, you. It's too much of a big problem or something like that, right?
People care about themselves.
People care about themselves, too much of a big problem. What? Distance is an issue, right? You agree with any all these reasons, right? This is why we're not doing something about it. Is anybody saying that it's not my responsibility to stop people from being enslaved or kids getting, you know, people being murdered? Is anybody here saying that? Is anybody here saying, it's not my responsibility, let them kill themselves? Nobody said that. You all said, it's far, I'm busy. You know, that's what you say. I'm busy, it's far, it's complicated. Nobody's saying, you know, are they going to look at us, you know, bad? But nobody's saying, I don't, you know, it's not my responsibility. Why? Because we all walk around with the concept, we all walk around with the feeling and the concept that we have responsibility to ourselves and to the world. Nobody said it's not my responsibility to stop global warming or to help. Nobody said it's not my responsibility, you know. They said it's hard. What does this hard mean? What does this hard mean? Come on, guys. Don't be scared. It's my responsibility, but it's difficult, right? That's exactly the point. That we all feel inside that we have a responsibility to make a change. We just don't know how. I think. Really? I'll be with you in a second. Okay? Okay? We all feel there's a responsibility, just we feel that we're busy. Now, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, how many people were created? I'll give you a hint. It rhymes with none. One. Very good. One person. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the world with one person only? Adam HaRishon. Wouldn't it be created if we created like a whole group of people? Just like being born and like, hey, how'd you get here? I don't know, how'd you get here? I don't know, what about you? Hey, who's that guy? What's he doing stepping on my toe? Get out of here, this is my block. I was here first. No, you weren't. You know, like, why did he create Adam HaRishon one? Why? Adam Nivra Yechidi was created one to let you know, Bishvili Nivra Olam. A person has to say, the world is created for me. I have to look at this as if this whole world was created for me. I'm here, this is the reason I'm here, everything that's going on here is connected towards me. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah, of course.
If I say that to myself, then I'm right.
Oh, very good. Excellent.
I always have that question.
Great. Very good. I hear. Can you get me water? Rabbi Dovid has to make this. He's saying, I have to say that, you know, if the world was created for me, it's Gava. Right? I want to answer your question. Who is the most modest person in the world? Who? Who is the most modest person in the world? Moshe Rabbeinu. Who is Moshe Rabbeinu? He went up to the heavens and brought down the Torah. Who was there in the heavens? Anyone else? Angels, God, none of his neighbors. Did he like now look around and say, hey, there's no one here but me and God. Like, wow, I must really be a nothing and a nobody. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, really, you must not be special at all. I mean, you're just up in the heavens with God bringing down the Torah. Oh, you really must be a nobody. Does that make sense? How can he be the most modest person in the world? The answer is, in order for a person to... What does modesty mean? Modesty means you know you're great. Does Michael Jordan know he's a great basketball player? What would be if he said, I can't play basketball? What's that called? What? No, that's not called... That's called a liar. Okay? That's lying. You can't play basketball. You broke like every record at the age of, you know, 20. Right? I can't shoot. Who am I, you know? What's the pshat? The pshat is you have to know what you're good at. Moshe Rabbeinu knew he was great and knew he was the best, but in relation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're nothing. I'm smart, you're right. In relation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm nothing. I'm a leader, you're right. But in relation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm nothing. So pshat is, b'shevi nivra olam, yeah, the world is created for me. But who created the world? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world for me. So I'm nothing. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu could be the most modest person. But we all have a responsibility. We all say, the world was created for me. I have to make a difference. I have to do something. Nobody said, it's not my responsibility, I'm not going to do anything. Now, I want to share with you, I want to share with you a video. Okay? Could we kill the light? We're going to see a video about a boy, right? We're going to see a video about a boy named Carl, a young boy who changed the world. Okay? And the point of the video is to see how one person can make a difference. Okay? Okay.
But they're making fur from dough these days. Food rings this loudly. Uninterrupted family dinner is a rare occasion, and goodbyes are routine. Frank admits to sometimes feeling run down, but says he can't slow down when there's so much left to do.
A lot of people say, it's a lot easier to speak to say, I don't know the problem. Once you know that problem, once you've seen it in their eyes, you have a responsibility to do something. I think that's why people say, why you pray? Because I have a responsibility.
Why you?
Why not? If everyone in the world could say, why me, then that never would be accomplished. Why me? Because I've met those children, because I've seen them. Because I register a dishonesty. Why not me? I'm pretty lucky. What else do I have to worry about? Somebody said, you know, maybe... You know, this is a great calling at this time in his life to do something, but it would take out his...
Okay, a powerful, powerful 10-minute showing. I think it hits even more powerful because for some of us, most of us, it comes from home, you know, Canada. I want to throw out a question to you. What makes Craig different? What makes Craig different? He doesn't give up. Right? What do you mean he doesn't give up?
He has a strong drive.
Right? Okay. What did you say?
He actually did something.
Okay. What else? What makes him different? What makes him special? Takes it upon himself. There's a few things that make him very special. He's a kid, right? His mother said, you know, this is your last year in grade school. I've heard of my last year in college, my last year in high school, my last year, you know, but my last year in like elementary school, and it's like the first. You know, he's young. What else? He acts on things that he knows. He doesn't just sit back and watch, but he makes a difference, right? But there's something else that makes him very, very different. And what makes him so passionate? What makes Craig passionate?
He understands the problem,
okay. More than just understanding, it's true what you're saying, that's the first stage, but he takes it a step higher than just understanding the problem.
He believes he can make the difference.
Okay, good. That's great. He feels he has a responsibility. He believes he can make a difference, and he feels it's like one word I'm looking for. What does he feel? Okay, but he feels that it's his own. This is him. He owns the problem. He owns it. When his mother said, "Take a break. You're in 8th grade." No, I can't step back. The problem is still going on. I can't just sit back. He owns the problem. What? Right. He takes it as his own burden. He sees the problem as his own, and he takes it as his own burden. Who else, who do we know, a famous personality in Jewish history, who took it as his own burden? Moshe Rabbeinu. Where do we see by Moshe Rabbeinu? It says, "Vayar b'sivlotam." He saw in their suffering. Does anybody know what that's talking about? He saw in their suffering. What is that talking about? What's the case? Who remembers when we were suffering? We were in Egypt. Where was Moshe Rabbeinu when we were in Egypt? What was he? He was a Jap. Right? He was a Jap, really. A Jewish Egyptian prince. Get it? Get it? Listen, I can't talk Lashon Hara. I can't, like, my jokes are so limited. You know, I can't talk about this one. I can't make not clean jokes. Like, what about a Torah joke? Jeff, got it, yeah! He was a Jeff. Well, he's a Jewish Egyptian prince. He was sitting there, Al-Fandri. You know what is an Al-Fandri? In Arabic, Al-Fandri is like a sheikh. You know, sitting there, he had his long jalabiya, sitting, smoking his thing, playing with his, you know, his chain that they have and they play with. Looking out of the window, seeing the Jewish people working hard. Stinks for you, but I need to work on my nails. Can you get me somebody? I think I scratched it. He was a prince. And he looks out of the window and he sees the Jewish people. And what does he do? He takes off his princely clothes and he goes to the people. And who helps him? Kodesh Baruch Hu helps him. And he says, if this is how you care about the Jewish people, I'm going to make you a leader of my children. And I'm going to give you help. And we know the rest of the story. So, you know, we find by Craig, yeah, there's a problem. And yeah, I know about it. But he feels like it's his problem. It speaks to him. And, you know, Helen Keller, we've heard of Helen Keller. She said something very powerful. She said a statement like this. She said, "Pray for power equal to our task, not task equal to our power." What does that mean? Pray for power equal to our task, not tasks equal to our power. What does that mean? Pray. You should pray for power that's equal to your task. What's a task? Your job. You should pray for enough help for things that are equal to your job, what you have to do. Don't take a job that's equal to your power. You're saying, look, I'm weak, I can't do anything, I've never done anything, so I'm just going to get by. No, tell the Almighty, look, there's a lot to be outdone out there, and we want to be able to do it. We need your help. So that's a major stress that we have here, and we want you guys to not just gain and not just experience, but to take further with you and actually help the rabbis that are working be a light onto the nation, to your community. Let's pick on war for a moment. Why does war occur in the world? Why does starvation occur in the world? Is there not enough food? Is there not enough food in the world to feed all the people? David, what do you think? On the spot. There's enough food for the world times over. In fact, certain countries throw out food. You know that? In order to keep the prices up of food, they throw out food. There's enough food for everyone. So why are there starving people in the world? Why are there starving people? Because people don't care. They don't take it as their own. Why are there wars? Is there not enough room in the world for everyone? Is there not enough room for the world for everyone? Yeah, I want you guys to answer me that. Is there? Do we have enough territory for everyone to live happily in their own spot? It is, right? So why are people going to war with each other? Why are countries going to war? Because of greed. Because of selfishness. Because of greed. The moral problem. Okay? So when a person wants to solve an issue, there's a band-aid effect. What's a band-aid effect? A band-aid effect is when you just sort of put a band-aid on the cut, but it's not going to solve it, it's not going to make it healthy. If a person gets a serious cut, right, and he just puts a band-aid, that's not going to make it healthy. That's going to stop the problem for now. There's a band-aid effect, and then there's a way of solving the problem. The way of solving the problem is called tikkun olam. Tikkun olam means infusing morals into the world. How do you infuse morals into the world? That's by taking what God has to say and the way God wants us to live our life and spreading it. And that's what the Torah stands for. That's called Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam means taking like what Craig did. What did Craig do? He took values from a country that sees that something is wrong, that enslaving children is wrong. He took those values, and what did he do? He went and he helped with it. It wasn't just, you know, he didn't just take a band-aid. He's trying to make a difference on a bigger scale. Because the real step, the real stage towards Tikkun Olam is infusing the world with moral values. It's showing the world that there's a right way of living. Now, how many of us feel that we're headed for a major world war at some time in the near future? Excuse me for being scary, but let's just talk open. Huh? How many people feel that this guy, Ahmad, I can't even pronounce his last name, Ahmad Bijahad, or he's going to make some serious trouble if he gets nuclear stuff on his hands? Huh? All the nations are pointing out at each other. You know, whenever we do the smallest thing wrong, the whole world looks at us. You guys have, 10-10 wins where you are? There's like a news station that gives you every 18 minutes, every 22 minutes news. Like, in New York, it's called 10-10 wins. You give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world. They're going to give me the world. Okay, so I was in America, and I want to hear, what's the world? Give me the world. Tell me about the world. Every time, you have 22 minutes, we'll give you the world. That doesn't matter, the show is like half an hour long. But give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world. What's the world? Tell me the world. What's the world? Israel is moving a tractor 3 meters in the Gaza Strip. World war, please pack your water. Be prepared. The world? Some farmer who decided to build a house on some hill that's uninhabited is the world? There are countries in the world that we don't even know where they are, I've never heard of them. Yet every little movement we make is on the front line. Everything. Are you Jewish? You're God's children. I was once at the Statue of Liberty. You ever seen the Statue of Liberty? That lady holding up that torch for a billion years, right? She's doing the, Havdalah. She's doing Havdalah. What do you think that is? She's from France. She's doing Havdalah. Right? She's doing Havdalah. So a friend of mine, Rabbi, was standing at online. He has a big red beard. Tall, and he was waiting online, and from the back he saw people like pointing at him, right? And he wanted to hear what they were saying. And one man was telling his children, "This is my Sheshaya." The person wasn't Jewish. Yeah, he was. He pointed. "You see that? You see them people? Them is God's children." That's what he said. "Them is God's children." He was pointing to the rabbi. These are the children of God. They know. We don't know. But they know.
You guys came from the airport. They know we're Jewish. One time I was flying, I tried to hide it. That I put a cap on. I said, I'm going to hide. See, I'm not a Haredi. I'm not Jewish. So that's not a problem. I'm sitting on the plane. You know, I'm all sitting there good. Nobody knows I'm Jewish. This and that. I'm quiet. Pitam the lady, Mr. Levy, kosher meal? Are you Mr. Levy, kosher meal? 22 E. Kosher meal? I'm like, I'll eat it. I'll take that. Right? And then in the middle of the plane, minyan, you know, we're all sitting in the back, you know, crowding into where the waiters and waitresses are. Like, no, we're almost finished, really. You know? We have our talit and tefillin on, like, the middle of the thing. We're going to blow up any second.
What is that, sir? We don't allow fire on.
No, it's just ritual. You know, I got to pray. I was once flying, and I had to stop over in, I don't remember what it was. I think it was in Switzerland or something like that. And it had these huge glass mirrors. Glass windows. And I was praying. So I was with my wife and kids. It was a stopover. And then my wife, you know, she's dressed with like a hat on her head. You know, they got the whole covering her hair. And like my kids look like Amish. They got like pills coming out. You know, like strings coming out of their pockets. And I'm like dressed like with my black hat. Like I look like some, you know, some Dutch guy or something like that. Finally, I had to pray. You know, when you're flying, the most nervous thing is I have to pray. I have to pray for a man. To pray, minyan, fine. You get off the plane, I go to a corner, I stand behind the desk, it was empty, and I start to take out my tree. People like, four security guards jump me. Where are you going with that, sir? What you doing over there, sir? Come over here. No, I'm just praying. It's a ritual, not a big deal. See? Not going to blow up. And it's not liquid, so I can't blow everything else up, right? That's the newest thing. Can't take any water on the plane, sir. You're going to kill us all. Soda. Soda, I bought it. Caffeine-free Coke. All right. You see? Nope, can't have that on these planes, sir. Okay, fine. So I finally go to pray by the glass windows. I didn't want to pray there. I'm praying. I'm praying. And then my wife comes up to me. I want to be quiet. Nobody, not to bother anybody. All of a sudden, my wife comes up to me. She says, "Hi, don't turn around. The whole airport is looking at you. The whole I turn around." The whole huge airport, like 1,000 something people, just looking at me. So I feel like going, they're taking pictures, you know, like whatever. And they like think I'm weird. I feel like this. I feel the nerve, the tension. Like, what are you doing? I feel like going like this. I'm wearing a talit and tefillin, you know, in the middle of airport. But we're different. We're meant to be a light onto the nations, no matter what we do. Our passport. David Abitbol. Oh, I wonder where he's from. You know, Shlomo. We have our name. Everything. Because that's our task. That's our job. That's what we have to do. And that's the only way. That's the only way. That's the only way that we're going to be able to save society. And to make a difference in ourselves. And to make a difference in our community. Is if we have Tikkun Olam. So this, what we have this fellowship, you know, it's a lot of people coming together to bring you guys here to Israel on scholarship because we care. Because we care. We care about the world. We care about the Jewish people. We care about you. And what we want is to share that with you so you could take what it is that you've gained and share it within yourself and share it with the world. There are three themes in the fellowship. Okay? Moise, come here. Yeah, come here, you. Catch your tongue? Please kill the lecture thing. Three themes. This is one theme. Hold it, come on, man. This is three themes. One is this book true? Is it true? And if it's not, me, Rabbi Dov, Rabbi Michael, tomorrow night, party. Tonight, no, I have tonight, I can't, I'm married to dinner. Tomorrow night, party. With a cheeseburger. First one. Second one. Yeshi.
Karim.
You know what this is? Because we want to show you Israel. Hold it. That's the thing. We want you to see Israel. We want you to enjoy the land. We want you to love Eretz Yisrael, to become part of you. Hold it straight, man. We should become part of you, right? That's the second theme. That's the second theme of the fellowship. Batya. The third theme is... What's the third theme?
Wait, no, you stay here.
Oh.
Is? What's the third theme? Huh? What's the third theme? No, Shabbat. What's the third theme? Ola Gola. Right onto the nation. Those are the three themes that we want you to remember. That's what we want you to get out of this trip. And all together, we're going to have a great time. And our class is over. Okay. We start the light up. We turn the light.